Hello, everybody. I'm Max Hartley, and welcome back to Geek Out. Today I'm here with Talon,
Hello.
Patrick.
Hey, who?
And a new voice today, Skylar.
Hello.
How you doing, Skylar?
Doing all right. Good to be here.
Yeah. Glad to have you. Welcome to the podcast.
Yeah, hello, my man.
As you know, this podcast is our weekly podcast where we just talk about things that we're geeking out about this week. And we just have a very easy system to decide who goes next, which is I just decide right now. Patrick, what are you geeking out about this week?
Patrick has already shown us a book, and I can say that I'm substantially geeking out about it already, and I don't even know what it is. So
I could read.
I was going to say, this is beautiful. I have it in front of me right now. It's the Art of Mass Effect Trilogy Expanded Edition art book that I just ordered off of Amazon. It's currently on sale, and I got to say, this thing is hefty, and it's beautiful, and I love it, but that's actually not what I wanted to geek out about this week. Instead, I want to geek out about this little PS4 game that's called 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim.
13 Sentinels.
I heard about it via another podcast that I listened to, and may I say, yeah. Castle Super Beast.
It's the second time that podcast has come up on our podcast.
They are great. I love them. Yeah, Pat and Wooly are amazing. I love those guys. Super best friends play, if anything. That's what they used to be. But yeah, no, they just talked about 13 Sentinels Aegis Rim a few months ago in one of their podcast chats, and that was all they talked about. And I've been really enjoying that game, playing it on the PS4, and my God, is it complicated, confusing, insane, and I love it.
I can tell you from the cover of the game, it already looks difficult and confusing.
Yeah, no, it's I don't think I can spoil it, but it's
it involves time travel.
It involves time travel, mechs, Japanese high school students, World War II, and all these other insane, crazy things. And I'm just loving it. It's made
by the basic calm stuff, very simplistic, like Tetris, when you have mechs and time travel and high school drama.
And the best
and
part,
World War II.
The best part is that the mechs aren't even the coolest part about this game. It's like, it's actually just the characters and the students trying to figure out what the hell is going on. It has 13 protagonists. That's why it's called 13 Sentinels. And in the first prologue, you actually only meet 7 of them. But like I've been playing like at least 20 I've played at least 20 hours of it, and I'm only at the halfway point, and I'm really enjoying it so far. It's gameplay is divided into two sequences. It's either you're playing like this sort of this conversation and puzzle route where you're talking and acting as the students, and you're walking around the high school trying to figure out what's going on. And then the other half is split into this sort of like Final Fantasy Tactics sort of fighting as a mech, and you're controlling like 6 different squad members, and you're trying to destroy all of these different kaiju. And it's really amazing. It's a really fun game, and I really enjoy it.
It sounds really cool. What kind of combat is it? Is it like turn-based, or is it like first-person shooter?
It's sort of like real time, but it's real time, but you can pause the. It reminds me a lot of like Dungeons and Dragons, where it's like you have every combat session is quote unquote 2 minutes, but every time you pick a character, time pauses, and then you're allowed to sort of move them on the battlefield, give them their different attacks and whatnot. It looks really low budget, but it's surprisingly fun because there's a lot of enemies. Like it's literally just like dots on like a grid map. And you're just trying to, and it's like a tower defense. You're trying to protect this thing for 2 minutes or kill all the kaiju in the vicinity. It's actually really easy on normal mode. I might go on to intense because it's really easy to just kill all these different kaiju. But I've been really enjoying it. It's just a really fun game. Geez, and I wish more people talked about it, but
I have never heard of it before now. So, but to be fair, I did. Like my get my first PlayStation in December.
Oh,
so
for sure.
I'm still entering the realm of what PlayStation can offer.
Oh dude, so, you're joining in at the best PlayStation time in my opinion.
I did get a PlayStation 5, so
If anything, just like as a general PSA, Ratchet and Clank is free and available. And also Final Fantasy VII. Oh, the newest one.
Oh yeah, if you have a PlayStation, definitely get PlayStation Plus. Like I know like give out free games and that stuff. PlayStation's been the best one so far.
I mean,
they always had the best ones. I don't know why, but they nail it every single time.
I mean, the real answer is that you go for Epic Games because Epic Games gives you free games as long as you have the as long as you have the market installed on your PC. Like that's the real answer. But PlayStation Plus, you get Final Fantasy VII Remastered for free if you get it this month, and you will continue to have it for free as long as you pay for PlayStation Plus. But the bigger one is that Ratchet and Clank is for free for everyone. So as long as you own a PS4 or a PS5, you should definitely get that game. That one was
Ratchet and Clank is actually one of the titles that I have played on PlayStation prior to owning a PlayStation, and it's been one of my favorites. So that was one that I jumped into pretty quick, and I'm very excited for what is it, a Rift in Time or something like that?
Yeah, the newest one with the I guess like the girl version of Ratchet. I'm not really sure. Like
the girl Lombax.
Yeah, the girl Lombax.
We know nothing about the story, so
anything could happen.
We're assuming that Clank is going to end up spending some time with a female Lombax.
It's actually really interesting. I met the the person who ended up as like one of the narrative leads on that game. She actually went to the University of Utah, and she's an alumni of the cohort of the graduate program. And she was a really nice person. I forgot her name.
Super cool.
You should have found out what game she made in the program.
Yeah,
I know for a fact that she worked on Spider-Man PS4, and that everyone in her cohort, like everyone in her game project, ended up like working in the industry and whatnot. It was a really insane talk.
That's awesome. Let's see. I got about that, but that's not what I'm here to geek out about. So.
Oh yeah, no. Go ahead, Sal. Let us know what's got your fancy today.
Oh man, it's actually a Kickstarter, and one that I've been following for a while, and finally decided to back. It's the One Ring role-playing game.
I knew it was one of those.
Is this Lord of the Rings?
Is it the Lord of the Rings one or is it the Skyrim one? Which one is it?
You know, the Skyrim one doesn't seem as interesting.
The Fallout one wasn't that good. The Fallout board game.
The Fallout board game didn't take off very well. That you could recently buy the entire pack of minis for like $18 on Humble Bundle. So
I forgot about that. That looks like a deal, impressive. Honestly.
It did. The figs are pretty cool, but
especially when I have a 3D printer.
Yeah. Originally there was a Fallout pen and paper RPG like back when Fallout 3 came out, and it was really cool, where the big difference between it and like D&D is that the dungeon master made all of the rolls. So if you were trying to sneak past a horde of super mutants, the DM would roll, and as far as the players knew, you were successful until a super mutant ran over and tried to rip your arms off. So, and they had a lot of fun mechanics for like mini guns and automatic weapons, where you would shoot in essentially a cone. The DM would roll again to find out if you hit your target or someone standing in front of the target or behind the target.
What about this One Ring Kickstarter?
Yes, it is interesting as well. It is different than Dungeons and Dragons as well, which is what most people are familiar with. I actually don't know what to expect all that much because they haven't like released the rules yet. It's something that they're still working on. But the people who are behind it have done this before. They've actually created rule systems for like Alien, and they've got a bunch of cool stuff. I have to see on this
I'm looking
list
up now. Yeah.
I had it earlier, and then I decided to scroll away because I wanted to look at pictures.
Oh no, they have dice.
They have a lot of dice.
Oh, that's nice.
The big scary part with this is that there's a lot of add-ons that I want, And my bill for this has quickly racked up, and I have to decide if I actually want all of it.
How much are you donating to the Kickstarter?
Right now, like $200.
Whoa! Hey. Okay, I gotta ask. Like, do you get the ring? Like, if you get like the
you do not
$1. Oh, come on.
Is that an unlockable though? Hold on, let me see if they're unlockable.
It is not. There is no one ring unlockable because this is not. This is not set during Lord of the Rings. It's set during The Hobbit, essentially. So that time, and it's the main setting is the Shire and Eriador, which is the place where all of the it's north. It's where Bilbo goes for his adventure in The Hobbit. So not Fangorn Forest, but Mirkwood. Mirkwood Forest is in there. So you have the elves. There's the dwarves of the Iron Mountain, and there's just, I'm expecting a lot of really cool things to come out of this. Lord of the Rings lore is so substantial that it's, I can't imagine trying to work around all of the stuff that already exists for Lord of the Rings, because Tolkien had, oh my God, so much stuff.
It's got 30 goals and it's already met 29 of them. It's just a little farther away.
Are you serious?
Yeah. The last goal is solo mode.
I don't know what SEC is.
SEC is a Swedish currency.
Yeah.
Oh.
When was this announced?
It's Swedish kroner, but I don't know what one SEC compared to $1 is. All I know is that it's a lot less. Or like 15 yeah. million SEC is not $15 million.
For one United States dollar, you get 8.4 SEC, Swedish krona.
Yeah. I don't know. I've put a lot of SEC into this. It's like something like 2,470, I think, is what I have in there. Because with all of these unlockables, so I'm getting the special edition book because, I mean, how can you pass up this beautiful leather-bound, it's faux leather with gold foil stamps on either side, and on the back it has the text that's on the one ring. It says the one ring to rule them all.
That's pretty slick.
One ring to find them, one ring to bring them all, and in the dark.
No rings given.
No rings given. Max, you're not getting a ring, okay?
But I want one.
Then go make one. You have
that's
to. Good.
That's valid, honestly.
You have a 3D printer.
Get your.
I'll make a resin cast, and then I can actually make it.
Forge get it. Your Celebrimbor on, and forge.
I can take it to a jeweler, and they can melt my meteorite into it.
That would
forge it
good.
In the fires of Mount Doom. You know.
There you go.
There you
which
go.
You can, what you can do, you just have to make it to New Zealand.
It's not that far.
I'm telling
they
you.
They walked there in the movies. I can walk there.
Yeah. It. You can certainly walk from the Shire to Mount Doom.
Probably.
It's like a 3-day walk.
Oh, that's nothing then. If Salt Lake City, Utah, that's what? Like maybe an extra day?
Yeah, exactly.
I will say that this Kickstarter sounds super interesting. I might check it out, honestly.
It is. There is only 2 days left, so everyone who ends up listening to this, it will have come and gone. But their store will always be available.
Mm-hmm. You gotta love those.
Yeah, so that like everything that they've made is available for purchase, so this isn't something that's going to just fade into obscurity, unless it sucks. Which would be really disappointing if it does.
That would be extremely disappointing.
And this is like totally sponsored and like supported by like the Tolkien Foundation, right?
From what I can tell, yes. I don't think necessarily need it for what they're doing.
Well, because we have this, and then we also have the Amazon Lord of the Rings TV show that's coming out in a
correct.
Few years. And we also have
that's working on that.
Serious.
Yeah, he graduated 2 years ago and he's like, I want to do this really badly. And then he applied and showed his scripts and they were like, no, you're hired now.
He's
from New Zealand. And then he just like left to help them in production. I was like, oh, cool.
Damn.
He's a scriptwriter. And he got in. Not bad.
Yeah.
That is incredible.
It was really entertaining, too, because I can tell he's really busy because we were communicating with him and then suddenly nothing. And every time I go like, how's it going? It's like no response.
I can't wait to see his name in the scene where Frodo and everyone meets Tom Bombadil. And then it's never talked about ever again.
Well, I mean, the Amazon series is taking place in the Second Age, which is like a 1,000 years before The Hobbit ever happened.
Really? Oh, yeah. I did not know that one.
That's actually one of the reasons that a lot of the former actors of Lord of the Rings, like Orlando Bloom and Cate Blanchett, have come out and said that they don't think that the series should be called The Lord of the Rings because it's not taking place during The Lord of the Rings. The rings have not been made.
It's even before that. Oh wow.
It's before Celebrimbor makes the rings.
So it's more like the Silmarillion in the sense that this is everything before. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting. There's not a lot of like, I mean, there is a lot of source material for it, but there isn't a lot of like widely accessible source material that most people have like consumed. So it'll be really interesting to see how it pans out.
Yeah, how they translate. Like, because, oh God, I'm reading through Tolkien right now. I'm reading Fellowship, and my God, is that guy dense. But it's going to be interesting seeing how they sort of convert his writings into something that's actually consumable in a TV show format.
And that's the thing about the Lord of the Rings trilogy, too, is even though it's technically 6 books, which is weird. I don't know why they call it a trilogy, but each book has 2 books in it. He wrote that to be read as, like, an epic story. He did not write a lot of his other stuff to be consumed as a story. So it's like hardcore history book stuff.
Yeah, history's fun.
History is fun. History is cool. Remembering all the dates that you need to remember for things to become relevant.
I think history's fun when it's told in puppet form.
Puppet form? That's what we need, is a Muppets version of Lord of the Rings.
There you go.
Sounds like a disaster. But yeah, no, I mean, there's that. There's the Magic the Gathering collab that's going to happen soon with, I think they're making the main, like, Fellowship into Magic cards, which is going to be, it's weird.
I'm actually very excited for that because I love that the idea of Magic the Gathering, and I don't have the money, obviously, to jump into it and play it. We did that one episode a long time ago where we did like a draft and played, and it was probably a train wreck for those who understand Magic the Gathering, but we all had fun. But when I heard that collab, I was like, okay, I actually like collecting pretty cards. I do that with tarot cards already. So I'm like, oh man, if you get these magic artists and like magic style cards and IPs that I enjoy, I'm going to collect and buy those.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
That's going to be awesome. I love that idea.
I'm a very enfranchised player in Magic. I own a whole bunch of cards and stuff. And I know that at least in the community, people are like scared because it's like they had a similar, I guess, collaboration with The Walking Dead last year.
And really?
Yeah. Like you got like cards like Glenn and Rick and Daryl. You know, like you got these different cards that were technically like real cards. And a lot of people didn't like the fact that it was invading this.
I would agree with that too. I don't imagine that the cards are released for competitive play.
Like, so they said that, like back then they did do that, but in their recent statement for this new like idea, they did say like these are not supposed to be part of the core like gameplay and that stuff. So like, don't worry, this is not like, oh, now this is part of the franchise. They're not trying to do like a Fortnite thing. They're just like, hey, by the way, if you're not a super fan of Magic, but you like seeing us put these IPs in a similar format, here you go. And I'm like, I enjoy that.
As long as it's executed well and they don't have to do just a butt ton of balancing, then I'm all for it.
I mean, there's gonna be this one, and then there's gonna be the Warhammer 40K one, and then we're actually getting the Dungeons & Dragons set this year, which is, I mean, I think it's going to be the reason why a whole bunch of people end up joining and playing Magic this year. But
Wizards of the Coast has actually done a lot with Magic the Gathering already for obvious reasons. But yeah, they've crossed over for D&D books and stuff. So that was one that I saw coming like 100 miles away. But Lord of the Rings, no, very much no. And I did not know that there was a Walking Dead one.
Yeah, I mean, you know that.
I'd be interested to see those cards, though.
You know, Games Workshop did a Lord of the Rings version, right?
Really?
You can buy, yeah, you can buy Fellowship minifigures and like build your armies and that stuff and play it, and it's the same as the Warhammer rule set. So
yeah, except with actual elves instead of weird space elves. I forget what they're called.
Eldar.
The Eldar, yeah. Mm-hmm. And instead of chaos, it's, I guess, just orcs.
Sauron, orcs, whatever. I don't read. I can't read. I can't read. I only watch the movies, and I still haven't finished that.
The book is fantastic, Max. You should read it.
I wish I could read it.
It's not like you have other things going on right now.
Oh, yeah. Definitely not. Definitely not. There's definitely not a pile of projects to my right here.
Right. The other thing, I just wanted to add the last thing that like grabbed my attention about this Kickstarter is I'm going to be getting cloth maps.
Whoa.
No
way.
Cloth maps of Eriador and the Shire.
You know we're big nerds when you say cloth maps and two of us go, heck yeah.
So, are they electric dryer safe, dude?
I have no idea. I don't know any of the specs for them yet. They have not actually been created yet. They're working on it because obviously they were added as Kickstarter stretch goals that they have just completely wiped out, destroyed everything that they have set up. They've added like they started with 10 and now they're on what, 30? Yeah, 30.
Yeah.
Which is just bonkers. So
I mean, if you want to feel better about your purchase here, Talon, I spent $600 to $800 on a Kickstarter.
I mean, I have
all the expansions for it. It's that Darkest Dungeon Kickstarter. I got two versions of that because my friend wanted one really bad and he was disappointed. And I was like, I have the dough and I don't want to be smart with my money. So Merry Christmas.
I got
him that with all the extensions along with mine and all the extensions.
That's really cool.
What did you get with the Kickstarter?
The Darkest Dungeon board game just comes with minifigs of all of the characters pretty much. Mm-hmm. They have all of them now. And then of course,
do they have all of them now?
Oh yeah, when they finished, they're like, yeah, we got all of them. We got I think the only thing they didn't really get into, but they still threw in, was like the PvP part of Darkest Dungeon, the most recent part of Darkest Dungeon. Okay. But they also weren't like planning to implement that into the game. So they have like the Blood Feast and the Cosmic Farm, whatever it's called, which are two expansions to that. And they added all the minifigs for that, and they're beautifully sculpted and they're you can paint them, and I'm excited to get it. I don't get it until September, but I just am excited for these minifigs. And then of course they're like, oh, by the way, a bonus here, we got all those hero minifigs, we got another set of them in different positions, $35. And I'm like, I wish I knew that beforehand, because man, I wish I had that money to get those extra ones. But yeah, that's the that make you feel better about how much money you spent on that.
It does, but it doesn't, because guess what? I already purchased the Divinity Original Sin board game with all the expansions for that, which was a pretty big.
Okay, but that was another exclusive though, right?
No, that is something that you can still get.
On
like the post Kickstarter site. I don't know what that's called.
Oh, yeah. It's a new thing the Kickstarter has been doing where it's just like, hey, are you late to this? Because there's a lot of people. That almost happened to me where I saw another Kickstarter the same time around Darkest Dungeon. It was Hellboy D&D and all stuff. And I saw it and it was like, hey, by the way, 7 hours left. And I was like, ugh! And so I impulse bought.
Right.
Because for a lot of
projects, that isn't something that happens. It has to be like a project that's actually going to be completed, which is often my worry with Kickstarter is like, okay, these people are now getting like thousands of orders when their original goal was to only get like hundreds of orders. And the production ramp up from hundreds to thousands is pretty severe. And I feel like that can put a lot of stress on timetables that they might have originally thought of. But that's why books that are almost completed, movies, I'm also a big fan of, like, supporting through Kickstarter. But dice, I am not. I hate supporting dice through Kickstarter, because if it's really popular, all of a sudden you have, like, thousands of other people that are waiting for dice, and they have to make each set of dice, which just takes time.
Yeah.
So it's worrisome for back some things on Kickstarter, but I have obviously jumped for a couple things recently that have ended up being very expensive, but hopefully they are amazing.
Yeah, I hope you can be at peace with yourself, because there are 13,091 backers. So 13,090 other people have decided to go the same route you have. And of the 11,800 goal US dollars, there has been a total pledge of 1.62 million
Jesus
US dollars, and it was funded in 4 minutes.
Yeah.
You guys want to make a Kickstarder?
Right, it just has to be cool looking so that everyone jumps on board immediately.
Yeah,
reminds me a lot of, like, the Critical Role animated series Kickstarter, where it got funded in an hour,
and
did it take that long to fund?
Yeah,
it was ridiculous. Like, it took that long because it was processing in the site. Their site started crashing from this, like, actual traffic on their site.
Yeah, they ended up hitting like $5 million or something like that, and they were just posting video after video of how insane it was going.
By the time they upload a video response, they tripled their actual amount they wanted to get. I think they were at like $3 million at that point. He's like, we're thankful so much for you guys donating and reaching $1 million in one day. And then, like, a little thing here. It's $3 million as of today posting this. It's just like, oh my God. I think
what was so cool about that, which, like, just kind of makes sense, but that the voice actors that play their characters are voice acting the characters in the animated series, which, like, seems obvious, but that's still really cool. But also, how, like, surreal would that be, that your D&D character that you've been streaming and just been playing for the last 2 years is now all of a sudden going to be, like, forever, like, remembered as this animated feature. And
as long as it doesn't suck.
As long as it doesn't suck. But given what Critical Role people have, like, the work that they've put into stuff, they all seem very passionate about what they're working on. So I think we'll be okay.
Oh, yeah. No, I have high hopes for it. But, I mean, we haven't heard anything about it in, like, quite a while.
You're right. Yeah.
Well, let's see. I mean, it may have been affected by, you know, the pandemic.
Everything. Oh, good Lord. Yeah. My Divinity Original Sin 2 board game was supposed to ship this March, but they've pushed it back to, like, September, because they're like,
everything's getting pushed.
We haven't play tested enough. We don't know that everything's balanced. So
yeah. Oh, no, that's totally fair.
Yeah.
Take your time.
And good Lord, with how deep of the game that it's supposed to be and how many cards that they've added, that must be a nightmare trying to balance test everything. So all right, I think that I have derailed us enough on just all of the things.
So many derails.
So, well, how about we move on?
Yeah, let's move on to you, Skylar. Let's get an introduction of you. How about that? After an hour of us derailing the conversation,
we haven't been that bad. It's only been like 25 minutes, right?
Oh yeah, it's not that long.
It's not too bad. Well, I mean, I've just been. I'm more of a fan of some of the technical video games, as well as some motorsports and good old-fashioned drones. So, I mean, that's kind of what's come up on my radar this week. Formula One has had a bunch of new car reveals. Got some sick new liveries and brand new cars, carrying over from last year, because they had to do a couple of rule freezes due to the pandemic. Really cool. We had Mercedes do one this morning. Alpine, which used to be Renault, do one this morning. We had a couple of other cars last week as well. Namely, McLaren did their car last week. And I think there was one more that I'm missing. However, all of them, they're about the same as last year.
That's what I was going to ask, because I feel like those the F1 cars are so like pinpoint precisioned for all of their specs and their weight mm-hmm. and the aerodynamics of them all. Like, can they get better? Like
100% better. However, the issue is they had to do a – so they were going to have new regulations coming in this year with a brand new chassis, brand new design for the teams to work on. The pandemic decided that that was not the case, and now the new regulations are coming in 2022. So
interesting.
There have been a couple of changes this year. Namely, they're reducing the amount of downforce you get. So the cars are going to be slower, as well as reducing the speed of the different compound of tires so they get less grip. So they're going to be slower. The goal is to push all the cars closer together so you get more fantastic fun racing. However, it remains to be seen if that'll work out or not.
There's some really good drivers.
Oh, yeah.
And it does seem that most F1 races end up just like bonkers spread out.
Yeah. You know?
Like
that'll be interesting. That's an interesting choice, because one part of me is like, you want them to go slower, but that's like half the fun is seeing these guys just blast through turns at like, well, I don't know, like 60 miles an hour.
Yeah. Here's a reminder
for Skyler.
Please stop.
My Google Home telling me I got to do stuff. Anyway, so the these cars already maxed out at like 300 miles an hour on in a straight line.
Just bonkers.
Yeah, and I mean, like the fastest production car, I think it's a Chiron, Bugatti Chiron. I think went 305.
I think there's a new one.
Shelby,
I don't know what it is.
Didn't beat it.
They didn't? Okay. No.
There was a couple of things that went awry. So I'm going to benchmark it on the Chiron. The Chiron, I think, took more than a few miles of straight track to do it. They can do it in probably less than a kilometer.
Holy
so it's kind of nuts.
The torque on the, like,
yeah.
the board.
And the amount of it.
I feel like if you go, like, obviously this isn't the case, but I feel like if you were in the middle of the road and they managed to hit you, like the top half of your body would just stay there.
Yeah.
And the bottom half of your body would just keep going.
It's like a rail gun on wheels.
It is.
What wonderful imagery.
Right? The next time you're watching F1, can you just imagine?
This just serves as a PSA that whenever you cross the street, you should look both ways before you do.
For an F1 car, of course.
For an F1 car, right?
Especially if you're crossing an F1 racetrack.
Exactly.
I mean, hey, how many movies have done that? I mean, there's definitely some James Bond stuff. Iron Man 2.
Oh, yeah, Iron Man 2. Yep. We had Monaco there.
Yep.
Glad we're giving a PSA to superheroes and spies. They need it.
Be careful, guys, because
you'll need
you
it.
You never know. You get hit.
You never know when the supervillain is going to show up.
Get hit by a truck or an F1 car.
Now, F1 is it's difficult because NASCAR is the big thing in the United States.
It is,
And NASCAR is cool, but it's just not as entertaining as Formula One, or I would say Formula Two. So, yeah.
Formula Two as well. I mean, like the Formula Series. Everything goes up. I think it's 4, 3, and 2. They're a feeder series in Formula One. So, if you do well in those, you have a chance to get contracted by a team as their reserve driver, even a main driver on one of their seats. Or, if a new team wants to pay the $200 million it costs to get into Formula One. Feel free. It's Formula One to me is such an interesting sport because it's not only revolving around the racing. You have the ongoing development of the cars between each race. So this season, there's going to be 23 races. The cars are not going to look, they're going to look roughly the same, but they're not going to function aerodynamically, electronically, exactly the same as they have been or they will today, because between each race, they have people at their factories creating new parts, designing new things around the tracks that are coming up. Monaco, for example, super high downforce, is a lot of tight corners you got to worry about. So they're going to trade some of that straight line speed in order to get their cars to stick to the ground and so they can take the corners faster. And all of that is tons of strategy coming out of the teams. So it's not only, okay, well, we just go around in circles and do a couple of laps. It's, okay, my team is going to be working on this today. During the practice sessions, they have three practice sessions before every race, then the qualifier, then the race. The practice sessions are for testing out the new parts. Is it worth keeping on the car? Should we modify it in any way for the next race? And so it becomes this whole song and dance of basically an ongoing research and development of a vehicle over an entire season. And then once you stop for when the season ends or a couple of races before the season ends, you get a breather. And then the next year you start all over again.
It all seems really exhilarating.
It is.
Every step of it, like the technology that goes into it, it blows my mind sometimes. So the University of Utah has a team that works on putting together, I don't think they're the it same. The
Formula SAE team.
Yeah. I have a friend who tried to get on board with that, but again, pandemic and that kind of has halted some things. So
I am on the team, but the schedule is quite crazy. I haven't been able to make it to many of the meetings.
Yeah.
Oh.
But he was really interested in the material sciences for a lot of the stuff, which like they have stuff that it's like, what, why and how? Like the weight of their cars is ridiculous. And like the pieces they put on it. I don't know anything. It's just what I've been told and kind of like experienced secondhand. So it's a fascinating sport.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Since one I that see I don't is glossing over, I'm gonna pivot to a different subject.
I didn't want to say anything.
Yeah, no.
I could geek out about it too.
I don't understand anything about cars, dude. Like, all I know is Deja Vu and Initial D.
That's enough. That's
where I started.
What about Taxi? What about Taxi, man?
A Crazy Taxi?
Yeah.
Crazy Taxi.
I did want to ask you, Skylar, because you said you're into, I forgot the word now all of a sudden, games that are like detailed like this, though. What kind of games are you talking about with that one?
Oh, so like, well, Formula One has a game. You can play it.
Yep.
Cool stuff. Driving is definitely not as realistic as some other simulators. But that's besides the point. One of the things I was going to bring up, if you're looking to, say, build, so I know you guys play D&D or some permutation of it in some shape or form. One of the cool things, I play this game called Arma 3 or Armed Assault 3.
Yeah.
Really cool because it's like this military sandbox that you can play around in and, you know, make your own cool stuff. But you can, in fact, boot up a live session with somebody as what they call Zeus or the god. And they can control everything except the players. So they can
that's wild.
Place enemies,
I didn't know that.
Create like objectives and give it to the players. And the players do their best to solve these, well, essentially solve these problems with the tools they're given. So if you give the players, say, armored vehicles, like a tank of some sorts, but the situation calls for a more stealthy approach, it's up to the players to decide, well, we have the tank. But if we bring it, the enemy has air support, they have people with rocket launchers, they have other armored vehicles that may appear. And so it's all like building this experience and putting together something that is reminiscent of a campaign. And people do run campaigns in it. It's quite amazing.
That's wild.
That makes a lot more sense now for some of the things I've seen.
Yeah.
Sorry?
Yeah, are you in one? Picture?
Oh.
Yeah, are you in one?
Yeah, I do play a lot of Armor 3. I make missions. And
so you're Zeus.
Yeah, I've done a lot of Zeusing.
Okay, for sure, for sure. Is that what it's called, Zeusing? Yeah,
pretty much. Zeusing. So
I love it.
Like, you can. There's an editor that you start with. You can build your mission out there, or you can just decide, oh, I'll just wing it in Zeus. My favorite thing is to start building in the editor and piecing together like this story. Write scripts you can relay to your players. So give them a briefing, give them something to work with. If there are civilians, well, you got to let them know that there are civilians in the area and they need to be careful about who they're shooting at. And
you can add civilians to it too. I did not know that either.
I think I saw a viral video of that where someone's like calling in an airstrike and then someone goes, be advised, there is a civilian village in front of you. And he goes, what? They walk up and they're like, this guy had a gun already, right? And he throws a gun on the body and he's like, totally.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's,
man.
That's from Soviet Womble. He's a well-known content creator that deals with Arma 3. Very funny.
I didn't know it was that like in depth. That's super
cool. Neither did I. It's popped across my Steam feed several times.
I think I'm always it, like, honestly.
If you get it on sale, oh, totally worth it. The campaign isn't even half bad.
Heck yeah.
All I remember about Arma 3 is like the mid 2010s, I think, when it was at its like peak popularity, not because it was Arma 3, but because it was DayZ.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the DayZ mod was like super wild on YouTube and everything, and like I'm not even sure if it was on Twitch, but like everyone couldn't stop talking about it because that was during like the whole zombie craze.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
You guys remember that? You guys remember the zombie craze?
Oh gosh, I do. I remember being a part of the zombie craze. I got the World War Z book and How to Survive a Zombie Apocalypse as soon as everyone else did.
The zombie survival kit.
Read them at lunch. Yeah, all we did was read them at lunch and compare and strategize with our own homes. And I'm just like, oh gosh, I think back at that now. And I'm like, why?
For me, it was a lot of Call of Duty Black Ops. Call of Duty Black Ops Zombies and Black Ops 2 Zombies doing the Easter eggs. Call of the Dead was my personal favorite map. Shrink Ray was cool.
That's back when I got the Anarchist Cookbook, actually.
Isn't that illegal?
What a better way to defend your house. I mean,
Isn't that banned in the States or something?
No,
absolutely not. They couldn't do that.
The book has a bad rap. It teaches you how to make things like pipe bombs. But that is such a minuscule part of what that book is actually about.
I mean, like, you could argue a welding book teaches you how to make a gun. So, I mean, it's just a book with knowledge in it. But it's also kind of funny in this context where me and Patrick are like, yeah, we got the popular books, you know, that's like basic survival kit. Meanwhile, you're over here like freaking Scrubs. I'm actually over here learning real fighting techniques and weaponry. And I'm just like, oh, cool.
A lot of it is about like how you would survive in a society that has broken down. So, like, how do you find food? How do you forage? How do you, like, cook things without a stove? Because that's something you'll probably have to figure out. And how do you, like, if you're in a dangerous situation and you happen to be with other people, like, how do you set up a system where people can all communicate with what's going on? How do you set up watches? Because there's more to it than saying, like, in D&D, like, oh, my character is going to sit up and do watch overnight, roll a perception check.
You mean that's not real life?
That isn't real life. I was blown away. I was like, what? How could my fantasy role-playing game have lied to me like this?
I don't know what you guys do, but every morning I roll to see my constitution.
Right.
You roll a natural one, go back in the bed.
Right then and there.
But no, there's a lot of really cool stuff in there, and yes, it also teaches you how to make pipe bombs, but there's a lot more to it than that.
You can look up a botany book and learn how to poison someone. I mean, like, it's a book and it teaches you things.
Philosophical ways of life.
There is a section in there that is like, okay, what are the rules that exist now? So it's been a while since I've looked at it. It's not something I haven't taken a lot away from it. I couldn't make a pipe bomb.
Okay, so if I end up making pipe bomb in the future, I'm gonna blame it on you.
That's fine. Whatever.
This is audio evidence. to be playing in the courtroom. They'll have to listen to the whole episode.
Yes. Like, so let's make this good, guys.
So remember, tune back in next week.
Yeah.
Exactly.
All right, Skylar, sorry. I took you off. I derailed this again with the zombie apocalypse craze.
Which is hilarious because there is an insane amount of mods for Armor 3, including a zombie mod in which you can send hordes of zombies after the players in which they will have to fend for their lives. But it's... like, it's just like D&D, where you have to balance the difficulty. It's not all, just send enemies and more enemies and enemies. You need to give the players a breather. You need to give them some time to rest and recuperate. If they
loot
got
bodies.
Loot bodies, especially if you're giving them limited supplies. You have to give them time to replenish them. And then, I mean, you can have more than one Zeus if you want. So if you have super complex... you can have one guy working on one thing, and you guys are, I mean, like, we normally talk back and forth in Discord. Hey, can you go build this? I'm starting a new, I don't know, engagement over here on this hill.
Holy cow.
That way it's super fluid, super, like, you go from one area to another, no difference felt in the difficulty and whatnot. And I feel like it's sort of the digital military D&D. It's kind of fun.
Which, like, seriously has increased my, like, interest in it.
Yeah.
Like, from here to way up here.
Exactly. And this feels like something
you don't even need to see that to understand that I was down pretty low and then went up really high.
I'm surprised, like, I didn't know about that. That's awesome. Like, as a game developer, that sounds like something incredibly amazing.
Yeah, it sounds like baby's first introduction to game design and level design
it
and
is.
Everything.
But yeah, like, it's an easier format. It's so...
Yeah.
God, I'm angry at myself for not knowing this.
Right?
You guys like... there's Halo mods. There's some Warhammer 40K mods.
Okay, 40K mods. Might be.
Yeah.
You sold me. I'm done. And there we go. My next pitch is going to Arma 3.
Yeah, right?
Yes. Holy cow.
Couple of friends in a what they call milsim group, so they follow some, like, a rule set, and they have ranks and stuff, and you do paperwork. So definitely the military. They have a milsim, to rank up in the sort of organization. You have to apply for the next rank, and you have to have completed training, and then you have to have, it's quite insane.
You take it serious, like super seriously. Okay,
I would be a private forever.
I mean, that's still fun because you just, like, run out and go shoot stuff. And so that group, they're called the 700th, the Mermen and Legion 700th Cadian. And they do, that's all Warhammer 40K. So they deal with some fantastically modeled mechs. We have some space marines, the orcs and whatnot chasing after them. There are so many weapon mods. I mean, bolters, got them. Spades, all of them. Like, and then Halo. If you like Halo, there is a Halo mod. Operation Trebuchet is what it's called, and you get to be a Marine, a Spartan. There's the First Contact addition to it, where there are elites you can fight against, insurgents, and then all of these can be put together in sort of a pre-made mission. Or, like I said before, you can create it live with Zeus.
This is just insane to me. I'm angry that I didn't know about any of this. I just want it now. You just sold me.
I know, but now I'm overwhelmed because I'm like, oh God, there's so much that I want to get involved in now.
This is like when I first learned how to 3D model in my 3D modeling class, and I'm like, I'm going to make mechs. And then I'm over here with a cube that's, like, misshapen, and I'm like, how do I straighten the lines? Oh, that's exactly. So cool, though.
Time, well, practice, and effort.
Well, now I have something new to dive into, and maybe when I do, you'll hear me come back to this podcast and geek out about everything I've learned from you.
Oh, yeah, no. Give us an update.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Yeah.
All right, sure. Max. You want to wrap it up?
Absolutely.
I want to close this out here with something I wanted to geek out about. It's also Kickstarters, and I just wanted to showcase a couple things I have Kickstarted because I got a couple back. The first one was a friend of mine did a pin set of knives and flowers. That's on my Twitter @jmaxwellhartley on Twitter. It's a very pretty set. I mean, like, who doesn't love pretty flowers and knives? They work great. But the one I wanted to talk about mostly was the deck of dungeons, which I got. I'm holding up to the camera for the podcast, but I'll also tweet the images out. It is literally just a deck with dungeon layouts.
Oh, that's
that you can combine together. And it's just, it looks nice. It works very well. The only like upsetting thing is like these things are not 1-inch. These are obviously for like the game cubes that you get with board games to show like how much ore you have or whatnot. Yeah. And I backed it, so I have the digital version of these cards. And so I could literally upload this to any game I want, and then we can make it that format. And or I'm going to look into how I print on plastic sheets and see how much it would cost to scale these up to make a bigger deck of this. And then you can literally run a dungeon that runs like a roguelite.
That would be,
I just thought that'd be a fun campaign where you have your players stuck in a dungeon.
And then what you got to do is you got to print double of everything so you can have even more permutations of the amount of cards.
Exactly. Exactly. So,
oh my God, that's so much.
That's another thing I wanted to bring up. But the big thing I wanted to bring up that's been geeking out about that I can't wait until, like, if and when we get our stimulus checks, I might just spend it on this. If you know Wormwood, they're the people most popularized, from what I understand, from Critical Role. They support them with dice towers and a fancy table. They made and kickstarted a modular gaming table. If you haven't seen it,
that's a lot more than $1,200, Max.
Jesus.
Look it up. Wait, did it increase? I thought the table was only $300.
Oh, is it? Okay, maybe I'm thinking.
I think they're only charging
table.
$300, which is ridiculous. But okay. This table.
It's a four-person gaming table.
It's a four-person table that you can upgrade to a six-person table for like $100. They have this modular setup where you can just buy the things you need and want for it and then build it from there. So you can start with the coffee table and then slowly increase it to the dining table or what you need for it. The amount of modular design that went into this is insane. They have the little things for cup holders and coasters that you can put on the outside of the table, but they also have them for the inside of the table, enough that they have a custom wooden DM screen you can set up where it angles your books just high enough that the players can't see it, and you can add another DM screen on top of that so they can't see anything, and you have this own little world, but you still have the gaming service in front of you. Like, it's insane. They have just so many expansions. I really suggest looking it up, because if you're a tabletop gamer, this is the table for you. This is a forever table. I think it's worth investing in personally, but it just is insane. And it's modular, so it's that deep table. So there's depth to it. And then you put the wooden planks, I don't know what else to call them, on top of that. And then it's a normal table again. And you can have dinner on it, and everything's fine. And they even like went into like, what if something spills? Don't worry, they designed the wood so it doesn't hurt the things under it and like that. And I lost my mind. My partner showed me this, and we're currently living with a broken coffee table because the legs are broken. So it's just like on the floor.
Here we go, baby.
And so I'm like, oh, it's tempting. If you do want to get into it, you have to basically get in line for it. They have a YouTube channel actually where they're going behind the scenes of the production of this, and they've been screwed over by their wood manufacturer, but mostly China, and miscutting their felt like incorrectly, and so it's uneven, and so they're like, gotta reorder that and talk to them. So if you want to follow their story, you can do that. But Kickstarters are amazing, and some things on there are totally worth it, and I'm really upset that I missed this table Kickstarter, because gosh.
Wait, so you didn't get the table?
No, I didn't get the table because I only discovered it like a week ago, and the Kickstarter has been done for like 2 months, and so I'm like, what? I want this, but it's Wormwood, so anything that they kickstart just
you
becomes
can purchase,
a product
yes.
on their store. Oh, and I have purchased something from them, and it was Metal Meeples.
Metal Meeples?
Because I love board games, I love board game design, and the Meeple is like something that's close to my heart and like a staple of board games. Yeah. So I just got a Metal Meeple of each color from them, but now that I know this is the company, and this is what they can make, I'm like, why did I buy Metal Meeples? I could have gotten a table!
Good lord, yeah. Do you, they're, the little character figurines. What game are they from?
I think they're generic. I feel like
I think it's just a generic thing.
Oh, they're like the
here's
the
your character.
Character.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just a representative figure for yourself.
Yeah, it's what the board games use to represent characters.
So it's like Monopoly piece.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the meeples. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the Kickstarter. Maple, $300 starting at. It goes all the way up to Purple Heart. And that's $1,500. So quite a wide range for anyone looking for a wonderful coffee table.
I don't care about wood so much. I'm like, just give me the maple.
That's the coffee table too. But if you want to get it all the way to that six person dining table with the recessed.
Oh yeah. That's $1,200.
Yeah.
My lord.
But look at all you can do with it.
Oh right? Yeah, no, I'm sure, but when you go to their store and it says place a deposit for a table, I'm not sure if I have the kind of cash for it.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if you
have to ask how much it is, you don't have enough money.
I'm like, hey, I might just propose to you and we'll put this on our wedding registry.
I might just propose to you with a table. Who needs rings when you have tables?
Right?
Look, this one has cup holders.
Removable cup holders.
It looks like on top of the table, you have to get a topper on top of it. Mm-hmm. And those are the expensive part. This is $650 for the cheapest
topper.
They sell
those separately?
Yeah, that's where they get you. I think that's the
From what I understand with Wormwood, though, is that everything is like expertly made and put together. I've never heard anything bad about their product, so
like no joke. I discovered their YouTube channel. I was like following them just like to see what the heck is their company like.
Cool.
And they filmed themselves in a meeting and the CEO was like, yeah, last week I saw that video you guys posted where you're like, ship out the bad quality and we'll just replace it a year later. We're not doing that. And he yelled at them for that, and that's like, we're shipping when it's actually good. If it means we're going to be late, then we're going to be late, but we're shipping good product to our standards. And I was like, I like the CEO. I like where he stands on that.
Got to respect it.
Crazy is that it couldn't even been like 6 years ago was when they were just making dice holders and dice trays.
Yeah.
And like they had been, I remember them like mentioning that, hey, we're planning on doing a table in the future. And that was back when the first season of Critical Role was going on. Mm-hmm. So like really not that long ago, and to see where they've gone with their product is really cool. Really cool.
It's insane.
They seem like pretty cool gents. I might check them out.
Yeah.
There goes all your money, Patrick. It's gone.
Maybe. I got to spend too much on Magic cards already.
It's you're right.
A great table. Let me tell you, it's a forever table.
That is one of the things that's really cool is that it does, because it's all like handcrafted, which isn't something that you can really like that is really accessible to get any longer, because like the IKEA tables definitely aren't handcrafted. So it's really interesting to be able to get that kind of product as a millennial or someone even younger. Because my grandpa was a cabinet maker and handmade a bunch of like just all sorts of products. We used to have a table that he made. Unfortunately, that got old and stained and broken. So that is no longer with us. But to be able to get something like that again would be really cool.
Yeah.
I just have to convince myself to spend $2,000 on a table.
And that's where you cut me off.
Yep.
Yeah. And that's where you lost me and my student loans.
Yep. I've only got a couple semesters left. What if I, instead of going to school for a semester, I buy a table?
Education table. Gaming table. Education dining table. The true dilemma of our generation, right?
That's the real struggle. Mm-hmm. All right, Max, you got anything else for us?
No, unfortunately, that's it. I can't try to sell you guys a more expensive stuff that you probably don't need. That's it for me. Kickstarters are annoyingly great sometimes. Well, that's been this episode of Geek Out. Hope you guys liked it. Be sure to catch us next week. And if you haven't listened to the previous ones, why not go back in time and listen to what the heck we were talking about back then and what was happening back then? I know last time we did Nintendo's Direct stuff, which was interesting.
Those Zelda controllers.
Those Zelda controllers. More aesthetic stuff that you don't need, but you want.
But damn, they're pretty.
They really are. Anyways, we'll see you guys next time.
Geek out!